matters who did it. They needed killing. Tried to snatch the wrong girls. Our girls know how to shoot, Sarge replied. So you say, Billy replied. Sarge laughed. I don't say. The evidence is pretty damn clear. Two of them are dead. Not what I mean. You say they were trying to grab some girls. Billy replied. Before Sarge could say anything, one of Billy's men spoke. Billy, this is bullshit. Billy raised a hand in reply, and nothing more was said by his minion. No, he doesn't say. My daughters do. They're the ones that shot the sacks of shit, I replied. Billy looked at me for the first time. Nice brooch. I looked down at the star pinned to the center of my vest and grabbed it. Turning it up, I replied, It is, isn't it? What about him? What are you going to do with him? Billy asked. Sarge looked at me. I don't know, Sheriff. What do you want to do with him? I hadn't even thought about it. I looked down at the form lying in the leaves and dirt on the road. What to do? Looking back up at Billy, I said, He's guilty of attempted kidnapping, of minors, no less. I looked back at him. Looks like he'll be executed. That last word stirred Billy's men. Like hell, one of them shouted, as they all seemed to start moving. If you don't want to lose more of your men today, I suggest you put a leash on your dogs, Sarge shouted. We've got them outnumbered, another of them shouted. Billy raised a hand again. That we can see. His eyes darted around. Why don't you just punish him some way, whip him or something? Sarge smiled. Shit, that's like eating pussy through panties. Just ain't good for anyone involved. Billy nodded at his trust toady. It'd be good for him. Sarge glanced back. Somehow I don't think the lesson would stick the same. Billy looked up and sniffed loudly. You want me to just let you kill another one of my men? I don't remember asking your permission, I shot back. You willing to start a fight over some trash that's guilty of trying to grab kids? Sarge asked. Billy rolled his head, his neck giving an audible pop. They're young. You know how it is. It's not exactly easy to get a date these days. Hearing the words, I felt my blood rise. My ears got hot, and I could feel the rage building in me. So they try and snatch an 8-year-old girl? You think that's right? You sick fucks rape kids? I shouted. Without skipping a beat, Billy asked, How old was the other girl? The statement slapped me in the side of the head. I was speechless. Sarge, however, was not. What's the age limit for your rape victims? I mean, what's too young? I didn't wait to hear the answer. It doesn't matter. You fuckers need to kick rocks. I pointed to the prisoner. This one stays here. And if I catch any more of your sick fucks trying to grab anyone, anywhere, I'll put a bullet in their head, too. Billy rolled his shoulders and stiffened. If you're going to do it, then do it. He looked at the man on the road. Execute him. Again, I wasn't ready for the response. It wasn't until Sarge looked at me that I realized it really was going to happen. Right now, right here. I pulled the guy to his feet and snatched the bandana from his mouth. He immediately began begging Billy to help him, to take him home, as if this were all up to him to decide. I looked back at Billy. You want to watch? Fine by me. I quickly drew my pistol and raised it. As the muzzle swept past the man's head, I squeezed the trigger. The blast cut his pleas in mid-sentence as the body fell to the ground, issuing a geyser of blood in an arc. The world slowed. Time seemed to blur, like putty being pulled. The sound of the casing hitting the road and bouncing echoed in my head. Billy's men all jumped. Billy didn't even blink. Instead, the corners of his mouth pulled down slightly as his head slowly nodded, the movement barely perceptible. Without saying a word, he turned and climbed onto one of the ATVs, and his band of miscreants followed his lead. In a flurry of sound and dust, they were gone. It was surprising, really. They simply mounted up and left, without a word said. Ted came out of the woods. He was shaking his head. "We should have ended this here while we could." "And some of us would have died," Sarge said. Mike came jogging up. "Why didn't we kill those fuckers?" "They're just going to come back," Ted added. "I was waiting for the shooting to start," Thad said. "I'm with Sarge. There were too many of them. Someone would have been killed," I said. Ted spit into the dirt. "You know they're coming back." Sarge was looking out towards the road.
"I figure as much. We need to get them a really nice reception ready.
How are we going to know when, or where for that matter, they're going to come?" Tyler asked, wiping beads of sweat from his forehead. It was still mild out, so it wasn't the heat causing his head to leak. Sarge looked at Mike.
"You said you think you know where they're laying their head at night?"
Mike nodded. "I do." Then pointing to the body on the ground, "If Chief Lone here hadn't popped that guy's grape, we could have asked him." The reference to the street execution by the police chief of Saigon in 1968 wasn't lost on me.
"No sense crying over spilled brains at this point. Teddy, you two go see if you can find them. Get an eyeball on them and see what we're up against," Sarge said, as he rolled the dead man's head over with the toe of his boot.
"Damn, that 45 makes a hell of a hole."
"We'll go after dark. Let's get some comms set up," Ted said. Then he slapped Mike on the shoulder. "Come on, let's get our shit together."
"You want some help?" Jeff asked.
"You can help provide security if you want. We're going to ride in close, and then proceed from there on foot. You can hang back and cover the ATVs," Ted replied. Jeff nodded.
"Sounds good. I'm in."
"Get your marbles together and let Teddy shake you down before you head out," Sarge said.
"I'll help you guys get ready, but I'll stay here to assist with security," Doc said, following behind the guys. "What's your plan? You going to try and hit them where they live?" I asked.
"No, I figure they'll be coming soon enough," Sarge answered.
"I think we need to increase our firepower up here. We need to bring one of the buggies up here with one of the machine guns on it. Maybe keep it out of sight, but have it here just in case. We can park it in the woods there," I said, pointing into the trees at the north side of the road.
"That sure would make me feel better," Thad added.
"We can do that. Thad, why don't you come back with me and we'll set it up? You can bring it back up here," Sarge said.
I stayed at the barricade with Tyler while everyone else went to prepare for the night's activities. I was thinking of what could have been done differently. If we should have just punched the clock and gone all OK Corral right there. I know someone would have been shot. Those guys were far too well armed. Even if it weren't an immediately fatal shot, it may as well be. Infection or the need for advanced care would only result in a lingering and miserable death. Tyler couldn't stop looking at the body. The pool of blood the head was lying in had turned really dark and started to gel. I could see him look at the body, then at me, but it didn't matter. It was done. Maybe I shouldn't have shot the bastard. But what do you do with miscreants like that? They were trying to take my girls. My girls. On second thought, it's exactly what they needed. Back in the day, they would have been arrested, maybe put in jail, maybe. Some shitbag lawyer would claim they were sick and that therapy was the proper remedy for them, not prison. They would do it again, though. I looked down at the body, but not this one. I could tell it was eating Tyler, so I finally asked the obvious question. Is that the first one you've seen? Tyler looked down at the body again. It's the first time I've seen someone shot like that, right in front of me. I leaned over the barricade and rested my head on my forearms, letting out a long breath. I said, it gets easier. I could feel him looking at me. His confusion, fear, and uncertainty were palpable. Finally, I asked, what is it? He hesitated for a moment, so I straightened up and looked at him. Go on, spit it out. I don't know if I could do that. I mean, one minute the guy's on the ground, and you're talking about him like he isn't here, and in the blink of an eye, you're blasting his brains out. It was that fast. I blinked and didn't even see it. You saw it, but your brain is still conditioned to the way things used to be. That's a horrible thing to see. So your brain is doing you a favor and blocking it out. He stared at the body for a long time, then asked, how many? I shook my head. I try not to think about it. Thankfully, Thad and Sarge pulled up on the smaller of the two buggies. A saw was mounted to the top of it. Their arrival ended Tyler's questions. Thad backed the buggy into the woods, making it nearly impossible for it to be seen from the road. Sarge wandered over as Thad was laying some brush over the front end. You all right there, Morg? He asked. I nodded. Yeah. What else could be done about it? Damn sure couldn't let him go. Sarge snorted. Don't make it none easier. I grunted. No shit. You go on home, check on them girls. I'll stay down here for a while. Just get a relief set up for us later. I nodded. Thanks. I'll probably come back with Danny. Just don't feel comfortable having any of the girls down here after dark, considering what's going on. Good call. Don't forget Doc is around to help out. You got any spare night vision? Yours is way better than what I've got, I asked. Yeah, we brought a set down here, Sarge pointed to the buggy. There's a radio in there, too. If the guys call in, you'll hear it up here as well. Don't worry, Morg, we got it, Thad added. I appreciate it. I'm headed home, I said, as I started to walk off. I didn't feel well. An exhausted, nauseous feeling settled over me. Looking at the ground as I made my way home, I could smell rain, that earthy odor that often announced an advancing storm on a warm day. It wasn't long before the first drop hit me on the back of my neck. Soon, the tan oak leaves that littered the road were glistening with moisture as my clothes started to soak up the water. It was fitting, really. The rain was the perfect addition to my mood. Hearing tires grinding on the road and the rumble of a diesel, I looked back. Ian was waving from the turret of the Hummer, soaked from the rain. Perez pulled up and stopped beside me. Hey, sailor, want a ride? He asked. Thanks, but I'm good, I replied. As I looked up, I added, I'll walk. The rain's helping to clear my head. I can dig it. Been a rough day, huh? Ian asked, squinting against the rain. I looked up at him. Yeah. You guys get everything from the armory? We did. Sheffield wants to see you tomorrow, he replied. For what? He shrugged. Hell if I know. I'm just a messenger. All right. Dinner should be ready soon. We're good. We ate at the armory. We're going to get some shut-eye so we can relieve you later. Sarge said you were coming back down for a watch. We'll come take over after some sleep, Perez said. I looked in at Jamie. You sure? You've had a long day, too. Jamie nodded. We're sure. I offered a weak smile. Thanks. I'll see you guys later, then. Ian slapped the top of the Hummer, and Perez pulled away. I stood in the rain for a moment and watched them as they made the turn and headed home, then continued my walk in the rain. Chapter 3. Mike came into the living room of the house. Doc was sitting on the sofa with his feet on the coffee table. His head was laid back on the cushion and his hat pulled down over his eyes. Hey, Doc, you got a stethoscope I can borrow? Without moving, Doc replied. You and Ted playing doctor again? Mike didn't miss a beat. No, ever since the time I played proctologist, Teddy won't play with me. Doc's head rocked back and forth on the sofa as he reached into his pack, lying beside him on the couch. He fished around, pulling the apparatus out and tossing it in Mike's direction. Don't break it, and bring it back. Mike snagged it in the air. No worries, I won't hurt it. Now properly equipped, Mike went back to the bedroom and opened the closet door. Looking at the huge safe, he smiled. Hello, gorgeous, he said, as he slipped the ends of the scope into his ears. Pulling a Sharpie out of his pocket, he uncapped it and held it in his mouth as he placed the chess piece against the safe just above the dial. After giving it several spins to the right, he began turning it very slowly, listening intently as the dial moved. After rotating the dial about one-third of a full revolution, he heard a faint click through the earpieces. He released the dial and smiled, noting that it was set on 36, which he wrote down on the safe. He capped his marker. That's enough for today. And laying the stethoscope around his neck, he headed out to the living room. Tossing it back to Doc, he said, Thanks. I'll need to borrow it again later. Didn't get in, huh? Doc asked from under his hat. Ted was in the kitchen and asked, Get into what? Doc wiggled his feet. Houdini here is trying to get into that safe. Mike looked at Doc with mock surprise. Why, whatever gave you that idea? You want in that can? I can get you in, Ted said. Mike stared at him for a moment. He knew better than to ask, but curiosity got the better of him. Oh yeah? How? Ted reached into his pack, lying on the counter, and pulled out a small block and tossed it to Mike. He caught it and smirked. I want whatever is in there in one piece, and tossed the block of C4 back to Ted. Ted caught it and shrugged. Whatever, it'll get you in, though. I'll try my way first. Ted held the block up. You'll want it later. I'll hold on to it for you, he smiled, winked, and shoved the block back into his pack. Mike gave him the finger in reply. I'm going to get some sleep before our fun tonight. Good idea. Now shut up so I can too, Doc replied from under his hat. I was in the bathroom changing into some dry clothes. The rain had soaked me to the bone. The house was quiet. I assumed Mel and the girls were at Danny's house, which was fine by me for the moment. Dropping my wet clothes in the tub, I toweled off and put on a dry set. After changing, I went out to the living room and sat on the couch, listening to the rain as it pelted the roof. I laid my head back on the sofa and closed my eyes. As soon as they closed, the image of the bullet crashing into the man's head I had just executed flashed into my mind. It was as if I had been jolted. I quickly sat up and slipped a holster onto my belt.
Picking up the Springfield, I looked at it for a moment, turning it over slowly. The gun was wet. Rain, thankfully. And I used the towel to dry it. Dropping the mag, I replaced it with a full one from the vest and pushed it into the holster. I picked up the carbine as I went out the door for the short walk to Danny's. Mel was sitting on the porch with Little Bit in her lap. Leanne was in front of her, with her legs hanging off the porch. Her H and K laid across her lap. Bobby, Jess, Fred, and Mary were there as well. I tried to look up beat as I approached, doing my best to smile. "Hey, guys." Mel looked up. It was obvious she could see through my attempt at hiding my mood. "Where's Taylor?" I asked. "She's inside, lying down," Jess replied. I looked at Leanne. "You all right, kiddo?" She shrugged. "Yeah. Did you find them?" All eyes were on me, waiting for my response. I surveyed the faces of those before me. "We did, and they won't be bothering anyone anytime soon." Leanne cocked her head to the side.
"Did you kill them?"
"I hope so," Little Bit replied. "You better have," Mel added. Danny walked out on the porch. "What's the word?" "The word is, the three that were after the girls are no more," I replied.
"And?"
Mel asked. "And there are more of them." "We're going after them, aren't we?" Jess asked.
"Yeah, we can't let them come back," Fred added.
"Mike and Ted are going to find them later tonight. We don't know how many there are, or where they are. We have an idea, but we've got to get some more info," I said.
"You think they'll come back?" Danny asked.
I looked up at him.
"You know they are. Three of theirs are dead."
The statement caused a flurry of comments. I told everyone we needed to keep our eyes open, especially at night. Jess and Fred were convinced they would be back tonight, but I thought it unlikely. Their leader, Billy, seemed like the kind of guy that would surely want his revenge. But he would probably plan it and pick the time and place to act on it. While we were discussing this, Miss Kay walked out on the porch. She was perpetually smiling, it seemed. She announced,
"Dinner's ready."
"I'll run get brandy," Jess said, as she hopped up. I was pleased to see the 45 I gave her jutting out of a back pocket of her jeans. She needs a holster, I thought. We went in and had a quiet dinner. No one talked much. Taylor wouldn't come down. She stayed upstairs in the bed. I, for one, was happy there was no conversation. What I'd just done was weighing heavy on my mind. Miss Kay tried to lighten the mood with cheerful conversation, but it didn't go far. I was brought around by Danny talking about the chicken feeder.
"We got your chicken feeder running," he said.
I was caught off guard by the comment, and it took Little Bit chiming in to bring me around. "Danny put the guts of the squirrels we killed today in a bucket. He said it was a chicken feeder." She screwed her little face up.
"Chickens eat guts?"
I smiled. "Actually, they will, but the guts aren't for them. The guts are for the flies."
"Ew, they're going to eat the flies?" she asked.
Laughing, I replied, "No." I leaned across the table towards her.
"They're going to eat the maggots."
"That's disgusting," Leanne offered.
"You have a bucket of guts to grow maggots in?" Miss Kay asked.
I relayed the concept to everyone, with Little Bit adding colorful details on the design. Once the description was done, I sat in silence with all eyes on me. Little Bit was beaming, smiling from ear to ear. Finally, Miss Kay spoke up.
"That is amazing. I would never have thought of that."
"Yeah, how'd you come up with that?" Fred asked.
"I read a lot."
"Yeah, too much," Mel added.
I smiled. Not anymore. Looking at Kay, I said, "Thanks for dinner. It was good." Then I got Danny's attention. "We have to go to the barricade."
"What? Why you? You need to come home with us," Mel shot back.
"I'm sorry, babe. We have to go. The guys are going out to find the rest of the group that came after the girls, and someone has to watch the barricade."
"Why can't Thad do it?" she asked.
"He's already down there."
"Why not Tyler and Eric?"
"Tyler is already down there too," I replied.
"I can go," Eric offered.
"Me too, I'll go," Fred added.
"I know you would," I replied with a half-hearted smile. "But we've already discussed it, and we don't want any women down there right now."
Jess jumped to her feet.
"What? We're just as capable as you are."
I did my best to explain the situation as delicately as possible. "I know you are. It's not that I think you aren't up to the challenge. These guys aren't looking to take food or weapons."
Jess crossed her arms indignantly.
"We can still do our part."
I walked slowly to her. "I know, but these guys are looking for women. They were trying to take the girls. Do you understand that?"
She stared back at me for a moment. "What do you think they wanted them for? Think about it for a minute. What do you think they would do with you?" I pointed at Fred.
"Or her."
Then at Mel and Bobby.
"Or them."
Lastly, I pointed at Little Bit.
"Or her and her sisters."
I watched their faces and could see the realization slowly come over them collectively.
Jess relaxed. She had her demons already to deal with. She knew the horrors I was trying so hard not to say.
She slowly sat down beside Mel and looked at Little Bit.
"Let him go."
She looked back at me. "He's only trying to take care of everyone."
Mel let out a loud sigh.
"I know he is, but why is it always him?"
"It's not just him. I'm going to," Danny said.
I looked at Mel. "And it's not my ass on the line, really. Ted and Mike are going out tonight to find these guys."
Jeff's voice came from the kitchen, scaring the shit out of everyone in the room.
"Me too. I'm going with them."
All eyes were now on Jeff. He smoothed his beard that was now way down past his collar.
"I know you think Morgan is always hanging his ass out in the breeze, that he takes a lot of risks. But the reality of the situation is just the opposite."
Jeff nodded at me. "We're all here because of him, in one way or another. It's like he's got some weird gravitational pull that holds all this together. We all owe him."
"I know I do. He saved my life. Took me in here."
He looked at Jess.
"He looked out for you. Got you your family. Shit went south, and now here you are. Brandy, I know you haven't said anything, but he saved your family as well."
Brandy nodded slowly.
"We all take risks today. It's just the way of it."
He finished what he had to say and shrugged.
"Just saying."
Jeff's statement shocked everyone. He'd never said so much at one time before. Once again, the room fell silent until yet another voice surprised everyone.
"I agree. I know he saved me."
It was Mary. She was sitting on a chair against the wall, and until that moment, I had no idea she was even in the room. She was dealing with her own demons. The sudden realization that Mary was there caused me to jump once again. I looked around the room.
"Is there anyone else here I don't know about?"
"I think this is everyone," Jess said.
"You gals think you're not being allowed to participate, but it's quite the opposite. We have no idea where these guys are going to come from. I seriously doubt they are going to come through the front door.
They'll probably watch us for a few days and find a soft spot to come through, probably through the woods somewhere."
I scanned the room. "It will be up to you gals to stop them if that happens."
They're going to sneak in here? Little Bit asked, as she shrank back against Mel.
They're going to try, kiddo, but we're going to stop them, I replied with a smile.
Yes, we will, Jess added.
Until this is over, everyone needs to be extra careful, stay close to home, and never go anywhere alone. We have to stay together. If anyone is alone, he or she runs a risk of disappearing.
The room was full of solemn faces, the weight of the situation settling over them. Danny and I needed to get to the barricade, and Jeff needed to hook up with the guys. Mel decided to stay at Bobby's. Brandy would wait there until Tyler returned from the barricade. Then they would go home. Jess, Fred, and Eric would all go home. Thad would be there as well. It would be better to have everyone together in groups. I kissed Mel in Little Bit. Leanne never was much of one for a kiss on the cheek, but she did stand up and give me a hug. I smiled and razzed her. Aw, I feel so special. She smiled and rolled her eyes. Whatever, she replied, as she twirled and walked away. I knew then she was going to be all right. It was raining, so I ran home quickly and put on my rain gear. A poncho serves its purpose well and has many uses aside from wearing, but I hate the damn things. You're always wet from the knees down, and they seem to be a perfect gutter for directing water into your boot. I put on my rain gear. It was expensive when I bought it, but Blackhawk makes some awesome gear. Once dressed, I wandered back across the fence. Danny and I loaded onto one of the ATVs, headed for the barricade. And Jeff took another and headed over to meet the guys.
Miss K has dinner waiting on you guys, I said when we stopped.
Good, I'm starving, Tyler replied.
You think we should go warn Miss Jenna and Dylan about these guys? Thad asked.
I shook my head. I wouldn't. They could be watching us, and we don't want those guys to know they have anything to do with us. That could make them a target.
I agree, Sarge replied. You guys take off. We've got this, I said.
Sounds good. I'm hungry, Thad replied.
And I'm wet, Tyler replied.
They loaded up and quickly left, leaving Danny and me in the dark as the rain continued to pelt us. Once they were gone, I went over to the war wagon and pulled the NVGs out. These things were amazing. I once heard someone say that having them made it unfair for those that didn't have them. The device I held in my hand certainly proved that statement true. Third-generation mil-spec equipment is light years beyond most of the commercial equipment available, though I was truly thankful for mine when I needed it. Had I known then what I know now about the quality of the equipment, I would have bought my own PVS-14. I took the NVGs out to the road, turned them on, and scanned the road north and south, and then the field across the road. Seeing nothing, I turned it off and walked back to the barricade. Danny was tying a poncho up in the trees near the buggy, his headlamp illuminating the paracord he was knotting.
Good idea, I said.
I thought it would be nice to have some place out of the rain, he replied. He finished the knot he was tying and let the limb go. It popped up and the poncho snapped tight. Stepping under the poncho, I stuffed the NVGs into the pocket on my raincoat. Danny pulled his poncho over his head and hung it on a limb.
That's better, he said.
I reached into the back of the wagon and grabbed a couple of buckets. They had lids on them and held an assortment of gear. Setting out our new stools, Danny and I took a seat.
I like the smell of the rain. Washes things clean, Danny said.
I looked out towards the barricade where the body of the man I'd shot earlier still lay.
Yeah, it does.
There was an empty round in Little Bit's rifle. I looked over at Danny. All I could see was his silhouette.
I was afraid of that.
Doesn't really mean anything.
She was out hunting.
could have been from a shot at a limb rat. Could be. I'll never know, though. Not going to ask.
Headlights suddenly illuminated us. I looked down the road and could see the other wagon coming towards us in the hyena.
The guys were headed out for some sneaking and peeking. They pulled up and stopped. I got a chuckle looking at the three of them. They were all camoed out, faces blackened with grease.
You know, with those beards, you guys look like the cast of Duck Dynasty, I said, getting a laugh out of Danny.
Mike, who was standing up in the turret, stiffened. He ran his hand through his beard.
I guess I do strike quite a manly image.
Not as old as Phil, but I'll take it as a compliment.
Ted's head rocked back as he looked up at Mike.
You're no Phil.
Sigh, maybe.
Mike kicked the back of Ted's seat.
I'm not Sigh.
Now Jeff's head rocked back.
Dude, you're Psy, hands down.
Mike looked at Danny and me. I shrugged.
Sorry, dude. Psy, all day long.
I think he's more of a Godwin, Danny said.
We all immediately started laughing.
No shit, I nearly shouted, pointing at Mike.
He's a skinny Godwin.
Mike shrugged.
Whatever, Jack. He said, getting us all to laughing even harder.
What's your plan for the night? Danny asked.
We're going to move closer to them, then get out on foot and see if we can find a place to keep an eye on them, Ted said.
Be careful, I offered.
Keep your radio close. We'll check in every couple of hours, Mike said.
What's your call sign? I asked.
Godwin. Ted replied, starting to laugh again. Then he asked, What's yours?
Boomhauer, I replied, before Mike could hang Sigh on us. Ted slapped the steering wheel.
I like it. Keep that radio close, he said.
As they started to pull away, Jeff began to mumble like the character, straight-faced, and I couldn't even begin to understand him. I smiled as they turned out onto the road. The headlights cut out at the same time, leaving only the sound of the big wagon as they headed off into the darkness. Danny and I sat under the poncho for most of the night. From time to time, I would wander out and take a look with the NVGs. Each time, there was nothing to see. The rain certainly was keeping everyone under cover for the night, though anyone that may be out would surely be up to no good.
The guys checked in once, saying they were leaving the wagon and moving out on foot, while Jeff would stay to keep an eye on their ride.
Returning from a survey of our surrounding area, I fell onto the bucket. Danny held his hand out, catching rain cascading off the poncho.
This is going to be good for the garden.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't turn into a daily thing. Every 3 days would be good.
Yeah, but you know what the summers can be like.
Yeah, hotter than the hinges of hell, I replied.
The mere thought of it made me start to sweat.
Danny grunted.
Yeah, but the rain helps cool it off.
Unless the sun comes out, then it just steams you in your hide.
We'll soon see, Danny said.
I rose to take another look. I walked out to the road with the NVG and scanned both directions again, just as I had several times before. Not seeing anything on the road, I scanned the field across the road. Off in the distance, I saw a light. When looking through one of these, you cannot mistake seeing light. It is literally blindingly obvious. I quickly lowered the device and closed the eye I was looking through it with. Using the other eye that still had decent natural light vision, no light. Taking another quick look, I could see it again. It was moving back and forth like someone using a flashlight. I turned and called Danny out, and he quickly trotted up.
What's up?
I pointed in the direction I saw it.
You see anything out there?
Danny stared off into the darkness.
No.
I handed him the NVG.
He took a look, then lowered them, still looking off into the distance, then raised them and looked again.
Why can't we see it? Too far?
I don't think so. I think it's an IR light. I think someone out there is using night vision equipment, and it's an IR source.
Why would anyone be out in this shit? Danny asked aloud.
And why would they be out there? I replied. The area the light was coming from was part of a large cattle ranch. Empty, open pasture land, broken occasionally by bay heads full of palms and cypress. Danny lowered the optic again.
Yeah. There isn't shit out there.
I'm thinking tomorrow we'll go out there and take a look around. I'd like to know who's out there.
Me too. There may not be anything to worry about, but the fact that they have that kind of equipment makes me curious.
That's what I was thinking, I replied, as I headed back for the cover of the poncho. Let's get out of the rain, I called over my shoulder.
Ted drove south, heading towards Altoona. The buggy was blacked out and he was using the NVG to see. Considering the danger of the mission at hand, they were all wearing radios with an earpiece and mic. Stealth was a paramount concern. Keying the mic, Ted asked,
"Where are we headed there, Pocahontas?"
"Up ahead is a road called Demco. Make a right on it. It will cut through an area of planted pines.
They are somewhere west of a clear cut," Mike replied through the radio.
"You don't know where they are past that?" Ted asked.
"No. We caught up to them near the intersection. We'll just have to look for them."
Ted keyed his mic.
"Jeff, we're going to find a hide for the buggy, and you're going to stay with it. Mike and I will move out from there."
Jeff fumbled for the PTT, or push-to-talk button, on a cord attached to the radio. Not used to the equipment, it took a minute to find it.
"Whatever you boys need."
Ted rounded the corner at Demco and drove slowly down the narrow road. The right side of the road was open pasture. Large oaks broke up the fields and offered some character to what would otherwise be a very mundane landscape. It also offered points of concealment. The left side was just the opposite. Thick planted pines. Even at only a few years old, they defeated any attempts at observation. The right offered an escape. The left, nothing but potential threats. After half a mile or so, the landscape changed. At a small bend, the road cut through an oak hammock, with trees no more than 10 feet from the side of the road.
Ambush Alley, Ted thought.
"Eyes up, Mikey," Ted said into the radio.
"Got it," Mike replied.
There was no ambush, though, and the road slowly began to rise. At the crest of the small hill sat a house not yet completed. Ted drove up to the house and stopped out front. It was a large place, obviously someone's dream home, or at least it was.
"Jeff, you come with me. Mikey, cover us," Ted said, as he shut the buggy off.
Jeff got out and joined Ted at the front of the vehicle.
"We're going to clear this house quickly. Just follow my lead and keep your eyes open," Ted said.
Jeff nodded, and Ted added, "You ready?"
Jeff nodded. Ted looked at him, then at his weapon.
"You sure?" he asked.
Jeff looked down at his weapon and shrugged.
"Yeah." Ted reached over and flipped the large safety off on the AK Jeff cradled.
"Now you're ready. There's no time for that shit if someone starts shooting in there."
Ted held his trigger finger up.
"This is your safety.
Keep it off the bang switch unless you're going to pull it."
Jeff nodded.
"Okay, got it." Ted started towards the house with Jeff right behind him. The house had a large 3-car garage, and they entered through a large opening where the doors would have been if things were different. Inside, the house was empty. The floors were bare concrete, and the walls were unpainted drywall. Using simple hand signals,
Ted led Jeff through the house, and it was quickly cleared.
"It's clear. Pull the buggy into the garage,"
Ted called into his radio.
"On my way," Mike replied.
They were standing in the garage when Mike pulled around.
"Back it in," Ted said into the radio.
Taking a small light from his pocket, he used it to light the way for Mike, guiding him into the garage. Once Mike was out of the ride, the three gathered up.
"Let's take some time to look and listen. We don't know where these guys are, so let's see if they'll give us some idea," Ted said.
The three men walked outside into the clear night. The moon was waning, but provided plenty of light for the NVG devices to clearly see the land around the house.
The area behind the house faded from open pasture to thick woods. Across the road and far off of it was another house that ran east to west in front of them.
Ted and Mike walked out away from the house a short distance and slowly scanned the whole of the area around them. In this new world, the nights were so quiet that sound traveled a long way. Off in the distance, behind the house, the yipping of coyotes drifted through the night. A large pack from the sound, possibly carrying on over a successful kill. Ted scanned the area where the tree line met the sky, a trick very handy when using night vision equipment, as any light on the ground would illuminate the canopy of the trees above the source, as well as emit a glow into the sky. Seeing nothing in any direction, Ted walked out to the road and looked back to the east, taking several minutes to observe the area they'd just traversed. Turning 180 degrees, he looked to the west. He was standing in the middle of the road, staring down the center line when a sudden flash of light caught his eye. The usual method of wearing PVS-14 NVG is mounted to a helmet or other headgear over one eye. The other eye is saved for unaided night vision. Both eyes are used, kept open while operating. When Ted saw the light through the device, he immediately recognized the fact he had not seen it with the unaided eye. He'd also instinctively crouched when seeing the light and had begun moving towards the side of the road. He called Mike and told him to join him at the end of the driveway. When Mike arrived, Ted told him what he'd seen. They observed the area for several minutes.
"Does it look like there's a glow down there to you?" Mike asked.
"It's really faint if it is."
"You think it was an IR source you saw?" Mike asked.
"I didn't see it with the naked eye. Someone down there has some sort of device.
Probably some commercial stuff."
"Yeah, but it could still be passive. I think at least we need to go that way and check it out. If these guys have that kind of gear in their kit, we need to be careful," Ted replied.
"For sure. I'm going to get the saw. If we need to break contact, it'll help."
"Throw some extra ammo in my pack and bring it too," Ted replied. Mike ran back to the garage and told Jeff what they were going to do. He cautioned Jeff to keep his eyes and ears open, and to call them if he so much as thought he heard anything. Gathering the gear, Mike ran back out to the road where Ted was waiting.
"All right, let's do this," Ted said.
They moved across the road. Using a ditch there for cover, they headed in the direction of the light. This sort of movement is tediously slow. Take a step and listen. Take a step and listen. All the while, your head is on a swivel. After a few hundred yards, they came to another area of planted pines. "Should be the state tree," Ted thought. They left the ditch and entered the trees, the needles providing soft footing and canopy, keeping the underbrush to a minimum. They moved along through the sparse pines for a short distance before Ted held up a fist and slowly dropped to one knee. Mike silently mimicked Ted, turning slightly so he could keep an eye on their back trail. After taking a quick look to the rear, he focused on Ted. Ted pointed to his eyes with two fingers in a V, the signal for "I see." He then held up two fingers, telling Mike he saw two people.
Ted motioned to a short, bushy chokecherry, and the two moved under it.
"Let's watch these guys for a minute," Ted said. They watched the two figures, which stood close together, keeping very quiet and very still. It wasn't too long before one of them raised something to his face. Suddenly, a bright light came on, emitting from the device he held to his eye while scanning the area. Mike and Ted watched, comfortable in their hide location. When the operator was satisfied with his check, the light went out, and the man lowered the device.
"Interesting," Ted whispered. "At least it's passive," Mike replied.
"I think we found them. Let's back out, move across the road, and try to get around them."
Mike replied by giving Ted a slight squeeze on his shoulder, and then fell back. Ted followed him, and then slowly made their way back through the trees, before crossing the road after a brief security pause. As they came abreast of the two men, they paused once again. Ted paid attention to their behavior. They stayed quiet and still for the most part.
"They have a little discipline," Ted said.
"Yeah, but they think they're safe in the dark, though. They squirm around a little," Mike added.
"Not as safe as they think they are."
"Want me to take him out?" Mike asked, with a grin.
Ted looked at him, his face glowing green in the NVG. Shaking his head, he replied, "Not yet, Dexter. Come on, let's move out and see what's behind them." This section of Demco Road was dirt, the pavement giving way to the ever-present sugar sand of North Central Florida. Mike and Ted were moving down the north side of the road when Mike grabbed Ted's shoulder again. Ted immediately stopped and glanced back. Mike gave him the IC signal and pointed down to the road surface. Ted looked down to see numerous footprints in the sand, coming from a trail on the opposite side of the road. The tracks turned down the road, heading east, the way they'd just come. Ted nodded and moved out, going about 30 yards before taking a knee on the side of the road.
"Let's parallel it and see where it goes," Ted said.
Mike nodded, and they quickly crossed the road, one at a time. It didn't take long for them to come to a compound with considerable activity. In the center of the property was a large home with a screened-in pool. And there was another home beside it, obviously part of the same group. Scattered around these two structures were a number of RVs and travel trailers, as well as tents of all sorts. Fires, small and large, burned throughout the property. Around each of these were varying numbers of people.
"Can you imagine what that pool looks like?" Mike wondered aloud.
"Pay attention, shithead," Ted popped back.
"Don't worry, I'm getting a head count."
Along with the houses, trailers, and tents were a couple of large outbuildings. Ted was looking intently at a large barn behind the larger of the two houses. It was well lit, the low rumble of a generator coming from it.
"That barn is full of ATVs and shit," Ted said.
"Yeah, see that fuel tank?" Mike replied. Ted nodded and made a mark on the sketch pad resting on his knee. They continued to map the compound as well as count the people there. Combatants, potential combatants, and non-combatants. Everything they saw was marked out. Livestock, potential fuel and water stores, everything. After about an hour, Ted twirled his finger in the air. Mike nodded, and the two moved out. Ted checked his watch as they moved. Almost midnight, he thought. As they approached the sentry post, Ted moved off into a hide, where they could both see the people on sentry and the trail they used to move to it. They had been in the hide for nearly an hour when two people appeared from the trail, walking down the road towards the sentries. The guys watched as the relief took place. Little was said between them, the relief taking place quickly. Once the relieved pair was on the trail to the compound,
Mike and Ted slipped out of the hide and made their way back to the house, where Jeff was waiting. As the house came into sight, Ted keyed the mic on his radio.
"Coming in."
After a short pause, Jeff replied,
"Come on in."
Ted looked at Mike.
"Shit,"
Mike said.
"Switch to the Bravo channel," Ted said, as he pulled his radio from his vest.
Once they changed the frequencies on the radios, Ted said,
"They're going to be expecting us to come from this side. Let's move around to the rear of the house."
"Why can't anything ever be easy?" Mike moaned as they moved out. They watched the house carefully as they moved, seeing no signs of life. Once at the rear of the house, they took a knee.
"All right, you stay here. I'm going to move around to the other side. I'll let you know when I'm in place. Then we'll move on them."
Mike nodded, and Ted moved out. As Ted made his way around the far side of the house, Mike watched closely for any movement in the house. Just as before, there was no sign anyone was there. Ted moved quickly, and in no time, Mike heard Ted whispering in his ear,
"Two in the garage. I can see Jeff sitting on the floor."
"Roger that. I'll hit the back door," Mike replied.
"I'll take these two. When you hear my shots, go in."
Mike started to move towards the house in a low crouch. He wasn't very thrilled with the idea of entering the house alone. Someone to open doors to make the entries faster and more dynamic would be much better. But they had to do this now. As Mike came up to the rear of the house, he heard the muffled report of Ted's suppressed rifle. Two shots in rapid succession. Mike quickly jerked the door open and moved through it. As he came into the kitchen, a figure rounded the corner. The muzzle of Mike's weapon hit the person in the chest, and at the same instant, Mike pulled the trigger. With the muzzle in contact with the man, all the gas from the shot followed behind the bullet, entering his chest and causing a massive wound.
"Shit,"
Mike muttered, and then he proceeded around the corner. He moved through the house, finding no one else. Keying his radio, he said,
"Clear."
"Police the body," Ted replied. Mike moved back to the lifeless form lying on the kitchen floor. The wall was splattered with blood and tissue. He didn't bother checking the upper body, as it was a disgusting mess. Giving the pockets a quick pat, he removed a pistol from a holster on the right hip and magazine from the left front pocket. Rolling the body over, he removed an AK mag from one of the back pockets. Picking up the rifle that the corpse still gripped, he moved to the garage.
"What'd he have on him?" Ted asked.
"Couple of weapons," Mike replied.
"No radio?"
Mike shook his head.
"Good. I was afraid he had one. These two didn't," Ted said.
Motioning to the two bodies on the floor with the muzzle of his weapon,
"Let's get the hell out of here."
"Where's Jeff?"
"In the buggy. They roughed him up, but he'll be all right."
"I'm sorry, guys. I never heard them coming," Jeff said from the buggy, holding his battered head.
"Don't sweat it, man. At least you let us know something was up," Ted replied.
"I never would have thought about it." Jeff nodded his head. "You guys are good."
"That's why we went over the challenge reply with you." Mike kicked one of the bodies on the floor. "This is the reason."
Before leaving, Jeff and the guys had gone over the procedure for their return. They would call him on the radio and let him know they were coming in. If there were a problem, and he wasn't alone, he was to reply with, "Come on in." On the other hand, if it were clear, he would reply with, "All clear." It was a simple system that would sound innocuous to anyone hearing it.
They quickly headed home.
Ted was still worried those guys might have somehow managed to get a message out. Jeff sat in the passenger seat, not saying anything.
He held his bloody face in his hands, letting his head bob against the rail. Ted looked over at him. It was obvious he was hurt, but it looked like he was mostly ashamed about what had happened. Chapter 4. I woke up feeling hot and sticky, a light sweat covering me. Kicking off the blanket, I got up and looked at Mel. She was covered only in a sheet. Good idea, I thought. Time to go with only the sheet now. Scratching my head, I stumbled into the bathroom and turned on the shower before leaving a foamy piss in the bowl and my drawers in front of it. Finding my way back to the shower, I stepped in and let out a yelp. The water was cold as shit, but refreshing. Washing quickly, I grabbed fresh clothes and dressed. In the new world, I wore my clothes for several days. Clean clothes were a luxury. Wandering out to the kitchen,